choice.
Really sustainably able to weather the storms of drought, that in the event of a drought storm, it would be weathered by this borehole. There would be no event when these boreholes might dry up and the depths might actually provide water, wind instead of water, and then the communities might run out of water. What is the alternative backup to this borehole approach? Out of the RB, is it not possible that the province might be, the RB being the funding window for regional bulk water schemes? Is the province also not thinking towards that direction so that you have a sustainable water provisioning and a water resource? The last short of my question, Chair, again, the COVID response plan as presented, I don't know, Chair, guided by you, I might have missed that. I have not seen a clear fiscal and economic outlook plan going forward that is related to the post-COVID-19 economic recovery plan. That would, in the end, absorb the 200,000 age 2024 youth that are in the SRD group. What is the post-COVID aggressive economic plan that would reflect that the province is indeed a developmental state that is intervening aggressively in the economy to ensure that the post-COVID plan would indeed salvage the province from the economic contraction provided by COVID? Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Mpumza, let me see for help to go to slide 17 of the presentation with regard to the recruitment for COVID-19 folks. Yes, I heard you saying that you are fine with the staff that you are using. But then, if you are to look on the medical officers, you say you are fine with the staff of the, that you're having, but on the update, you're still telling us around one interview. So the same thing with professional nurses. Out of the 352 ones required, only appointed 43. Then it's still around one interview done. With regard to the enrolled nurses, you need 167. You said first listing is done. Appointments in progress, but you say you are still fine. Can you talk to this slide, on slide 17, because on the others with regard to professional nurses, you say 838, first pleasing done, so you don't even tell us what the status. On the EN and PHC, there's no figure there, but you say first pleasing done. So I'm raising it in terms of the accuracy of information that is provided to us to enable us to do oversight. So that's the area that one was raising, because then under the circumstances, this gives us a cost of concern as a committee. Maybe you can clarify this slide better than you do. You can do. Then the other issue that one wanted to raise is back to the MEC for education, with regard to the issue of the water provision in slide 56. Yes, MEC, Michelle, I've heard what you said, but then you raised the issue there of the financial institution. I thought you were going to say that now that that agreement is come to an end, this is what we must do. And this is how we've planned to address this expenditure and to only say the financial implications, and then you can tell us what you're going to do. Because where we are seated, our biggest worry is that post-COVID-19, the ideal situation is that this post must be repaired for where you find that there's no water. So the department then must continue to budget so that kids at schools and teachers are able to have water. The other thing that I don't see in your report on education is the number of infections since this post has reopened. Yes, I've seen something where you're talking about the comorbidities of people who have asked to be reduced and the rest, but the reality is that there's been some infections in this post. And then that report is not shared with us. Maybe you can talk to this app, we'll see on the slide, but I couldn't locate it within the slide. The other issue, MEC, I raised the issue of laboratory in slide 59. And then I wanted the details in terms of the place, quantity, and price. And also the feedback as to who was responsible for the provisioning cost. That letter to me remained unanswered. I didn't hear the response coming from you, MEC for education. Maybe if you can then ask yourself to respond to that, that we also do. The other issue was about the disaster plan. For both that expected, when the MEC of health didn't do that, didn't respond to that, I should have expected, I thought maybe the MEC for COPTA will respond, but it seems as if this matter is not maybe appealing unless I'm told otherwise. Because the question was that in terms of the Section 38 of the Disaster Management Act, each department, in this one in particular, has the Department of Health to say, are you considering as the Department of Health developing a disaster management plan in line with Section 38 of the Act? Secondly, also now, we know in terms of legislation, COPTA. The question to you was in relation to say, as COPTA, are you also prepared to prepare a robust provincial multi-hazard disaster management plan of the entire province to deal proactively with future disasters like this one? And then I further ask, what are the arrangements in that regard? And then also, because each and every department, which other departments within the province have you identified to start developing plans and building disaster management capacity and the time frame for that? And then the following up with regard to that also, this must go down to municipalities. Then I even ask, when you meet as the provincial command councillor, so the council, which municipalities then included their COVID-19 resilience building in the IDPs? Because this is happening during the tenure when the IDPs will be reviewed. So are you able to proudly tell us that in the province, this is the number of municipalities that have then included COVID-19 resilience building in the IDPs? And they've provided a budget for this amount. Those are the things that I couldn't hear coming clearly. Then the other issue was around the 149,000. You are saying the money is spent with regard to the money that was allocated in May by COPTA. But the report that we got as the department was reporting to us, it was only 149,000. So then if you are saying then the money is spent and in line with the stringent requirements of the National Disaster Management Center, COPTA nationally has prescribed, so can you then let me give us that report? Can give you up to Tuesday next week to get that report? Because when you check with COPTA, that report from your municipalities in the province is not coming. So we wish you can commit to submit this within by Tuesday next week. Then at least we will be okay and cover to say indeed this is what is happening. So basically on my side, those are the issues that I have concerns on. Over to you, MEC and Kim. So MEC Madam.
Thanks. I would allow MEC Ramathuba to start, MEC Education to follow, and then I will come. I think it's the three of us who should take the follow-up.
Yes. Now, thanks, Chair. Let me once more appreciate this opportunity and apologize for the questions that were raised regarding Philadelphia. I think I missed them to respond to them. It was just an omission. Honorable Chair, we have not completed the process towards the signing of the Memorandum of Understanding. I think we were disturbed mainly by the level 5 lockdown because we were at a stage where we've already established different branches because we wanted to do things differently so that we look at our PHC, how can we collaborate as two provinces that are sharing this particular institution. And we're also looking at the area of, because there are clinics that are within Limpopo province and the residents of Mpumalanga would be closer to, because in terms of you know, the health, we are saying your nearest facility becomes your first point of entry as you access healthcare. So we want to look at this particular stream that will be able to then say, if I'm sick in Limpopo, but my nearest clinic in Limpopo is 10 kilometers, which is not within the norm, but the nearest clinic in Mpumalanga is within the 5 kilometer radius, which is what is within the norm. So we want that particular the stream to look into that. There is also another stream of EMS which will address what honorable members are asking, that will be able to deal with the transportation of patients, especially looking at our emergency cases that we pick up to say, if I get an accident a 2 kilometer from the border and the EMS station that is closer to my border should be this, because you would understand that this will not necessarily affect the Elias Mutualedi or Philadelphia Hospital. It will then also assist us in addressing even other areas like around Vila Vila. There also there is a stream that is working on pharmacy, the one that works on tertiary institutions. If you look at the referral, because you let's say you've got an accident from the Mpumalanga side, you then are taken to Philadelphia because it's close to you. Then you need probably orthopedic surgeon who currently is not there in Philadelphia, who must transfer you to Mount Bay. So such tertiary agreements should be done, and also the regional stream should have been. So all these are looking into that, and they will finalize them. Yes, indeed, honorable members, there is a serious challenge when it comes to the staff shortage in Philadelphia. One of the issues, you'll remember that towards the end of last year and the beginning, Philadelphia has been on media for all the wrong reasons. And you might have noticed that after we made some interventions, it has not been, you have not even heard the community around Mose going and continuously complaining. It's because, of course, we made intervention and get the CEO, and now he has been within his 100 days recruited for medical specialists, because Philadelphia is a regional hospital. The surgeon and the pediatrician, two of them are physicians. The end, beginning of this month, they will be joined by anesthesia, somewhat who is specializing in anesthesia, and also somebody specializing in ops and gyn. So we are gradually trying to fill in those, especially the critical posts that have been vacant, and which is also perpetuated by the fact that they are dealing with the patients that are not necessarily within their vicinity, but we are working on that. And let me reassure honorable members that very soon, with the current leadership in that hospital, working with the district and the provincial office, the memorandum will be signed very soon. There is a cooperation between the provinces, because we both appreciate and understand that it's all about our own poor people who cannot afford the private health care. Now, honorable members, on the issues of stigmatization, we must indicate that as a province, as early as the 2nd of June, we picked up already that there has been even worse stigmatization amongst even the healthcare professionals themselves, or healthcare workers. That's why we launched our campaign on stigmatization, not only focusing on healthcare workers, but at the community at large. We have not spent, I can't quantify what we spent, because what we do in our health promotion campaign, mostly we develop our own material in-house. For instance, in this particular campaign, we went on, if you go to our social media, our Facebook page, you will find all the posters in all the languages that are spoken in Limpopo. There you'll find all those trying to talk and appeal to the community about a stigmatization, to show the danger of it, that it will then make people not to come out when they test positive, and that results in people spreading the infection because they are afraid to talk, they are afraid to be stigmatized. So, and we also adopted a position that everyone is COVID positive, irrespective of who you are. So if we do that, then it means we will all of us wear masks, because we are all positive. We'll all practice social distance because we are all positive. We will sanitize and do hand washing with water and soap, because we are all positive. We don't want to infect each other. So, and then when all of us are positive, then you would not see the stigmatization. And also we as a Department of Health, we discourage the issue of, because I've seen that some media houses, when someone who is known test positive, they would want to put pressure on us to pronounce, which ethically is not correct. As a department, we always advise to say, let it be the person themselves. And we always encourage individuals, especially those are known, to say, once you inform your family and your next of kin, you can now on your own go out and tell the public that you are positive. That will assist in fighting the stigmatization, and also reduce the perpetuation of the stigma and stigmatization of those who are positive. So we want to appreciate most of the media houses, because when we launched this particular campaign, they came on board and they gave us slots to be able to spread the message to the community. And we think, when we look back, we have realized that the issue of stigmatization is no longer before. When if somebody tests positive in the year someone in the mall tested positive, there would be calling and for the shutting down of the mall and whatever. Because we are treating each other, all of us, as positive. Meaning, even if I was in the mall with someone who's positive, because I'm in my full PPE and practicing social distance, there's no need for me to be panicking that I might have been infected, even if you are in the office. That's why, as a department, we discourage the fact that when an employee tests positive, they must be shutting down of office. But that is also perpetuating the stigma. We say, oh, somebody tests positive, close the building, let's fumigate, let's do that. We discourage that, because we are saying, let's behave as if all of us who are coming to work are positive. Then we will be protecting each other against each other. So even if they hear that I have tested positive, it will not be a problem. So that work has been done. And we've also been using our systems that we had of Checker in Pilo, you know, as launched by SANAC, as we were dealing with the HIV and AIDS pandemic. So those systems, because they are still there, we have incorporated the issue of fighting COVID, because the very system that we use of fighting the stigmatization of HIV and AIDS, we are now using it to fight the stigmatization of COVID-19. Honorable members, the loss of, I said there's a third doctor now, it's a real a blow for the province. That has indicated to say even if these three doctors were not under the employment of the Department of Health, but at the end of the day, these are the three independent practitioners who were practicing in the rural area. That is why it becomes a real blow, because to attract a GP to go and work and open a practice in a village or in a rural area, it's not easy. Well, most of our healthcare professionals would want to see themselves running their own practice in the city. So the loss of these 3% is a blow. As I said, when you look at the infection rate of our healthcare workers, it's increasing and it's a worrying factor. What comforts us is to say, when you look at the public service part, we have done well in terms of the recovery rate, because we have not lost even a single doctor or nurse or clean. Despite that, the numbers are very high, and the staff working in the public sector, the numbers are very high compared to the private sector. I then further on said, honorable member, what we are currently doing is to say lessons learned from the public sector, which has assisted us not to record a single death, must be implemented in the private sector to say, how do we help the GP for them to be able to put on their full PPE, and also for them to treat every single patient as if they are property? How do we then assist a GP with comorbidities? How do we do that? So that we should not focus on one sector. For us, it's the Department of Health. For us, it's the healthcare workers. They are the same. They might not be on our payroll, but these are healthcare workers, frontliners, last line of defense, who are rendering services to the people of Limpopo. So for us, we have said we are now going to be assisting them, even monitoring the manner in which we monitor our public hospitals, that the CEO has ordered the PEPs, and when we do rounds in our hospital, we go and check if a doctor is wearing the PPE or a nurse. If you are not, we even go to an extent of charging you, to say we are charging you with the offense of threatening your life, the life of your family, and also the life of your colleagues and of your patients. So that's what we say, you must take responsibility of wearing your PPE. And if the CEO has not done their part of ordering the PPE, we will have to take action. Then the other area that we are looking at